I don't think there were any two people who were more surprised that Nick Castellanos caught that ball in game one against the Braves than Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson.
LA's like, oh. It's great.
LA spent the whole postseason kind of reacting to stuff on the field.
It was great.
It was great. And there that day in Atlanta was my colleague and our terrific Phillies beat writer at the Philadelphia Inquirer, Alex Coffey, who joins us right now on 94 WIP. Alex, how are you, and how was the ride to Lakeland?
I actually decided not to go because Lakeland is an hour and a half away, and I just didn't have that in me today. But I'm good. I'm standing on the backfield trying not to get beamed because I've had a couple of near-death experiences over the last few days. So just trying to keep my head on a swivel.
Spring training is not supposed to be this dangerous, kiddo.
No, it's not, but I feel like I should probably wear a helmet or catcher's gear or something. Because I don't know if they're trying to throw at me or trying to hit at me, but somehow I always get like an inch away from getting
Well, if we lose you during the interview, I will go off air and call 911 in Clearwater, Florida to get somebody to help you. I promise.
I'll try to get some workers' comp.
So I wanted to start with this. You talked to Nick Castellanos. So we led the segment with the sound of his catch in that game against the Braves. You talked to him about how he struggled last season in his first year with the Phillies and why he might think things are going to be different. Kind of what's your perspective on the player and particularly the hitter Castellanos was last year, why he struggled the way he did, and why there might be reason for optimism or why there might be reason to think, this performance is going to repeat itself?
Yeah, so I guess starting with just from a hitting standpoint, he said that he was trying to overcomplicate things, like was moving his head too much, moving his bat too much. When hitting coach Kevin Long looked back at his tape this offseason, he just saw a lot of like extra movements that he hadn't been incorporating into his swing in previous seasons. So it seems like as a rule of thumb with him, just keeping it simple is a better way to go. And from a mental perspective, you know, it was a little bit of a bumpy transition for him coming out of the lockout, finding a new team to sign with, abruptly having to find a place in Philly, people finding out that that place had been inhabited by Ben Simmons before and making a big deal of it.
He also, like Poltergeist,
the birth of his second son in May and not having time to really be a dad, that was tough for him too. So I think all in all, it was just a lot of stuff was going on off the field that might have contributed to maybe that transition not being as smooth as it could have been. And then, of course, adjusting to a big market like Philly. I believe it was Ken Rosenthal who reported that he was hoping to sign initially with his hometown team in Miami, and that would have been a much lower stress media market situation closer to home. And then to, you know, end up in Philly, I think, and that abruptly, not that he doesn't want to be here, but I think that it was abrupt and it was a difficult transition for him. So this is a long-winded way of saying I think it was a combination of things that contributed to what we saw from him last year.
Which should all be better this year?
I believe so.
He would say that it should be better. I understand, but he would say that none of those are an issue this year.
He is optimistic, and Kevin Long is optimistic, and I just almost got hit by a foul ball.
Again? Get behind a fence, for God's sakes. We're talking to Alex Coffey of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Follow her on Twitter at @byalexcoffey, Coffey. One of the great joys of spring training is you get to watch the old guys trying to come back for one more year, and you get to watch the young phenoms trying to make it. And the big story even before spring training began was Andrew Painter, 19 years old, one of the top 5, 10, 15 prospects in baseball. And I was really shocked when Dave Dombrowski said, oh, yeah, he could make this team at the start of the year. It just seemed I don't know that that's helping him, but I know he threw the other day. I think you wrote about, you know, the him throwing to the vets and what they thought. What's the sense right now on this kid for April and for the future?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't come out and said he's definitely making the team out of spring training, but right now he isn't giving them a reason to not not do that. Obviously, there's time left in spring training. We have a couple more weeks, and you know, a lot of things could play out. But the general consensus among the people that have, the hitters that have faced him, guys like Kyle Schwarber and Brandon Marsh, is just that it's really easy to forget that he's 19 because he's so poised and mature and you know, kind of unflappable, for lack of a better word. So there's definitely the maturity aspect. And then from a pitching aspect, he's added a fifth pitch to his arsenal. So now he's not throwing four pitches, but five pitches. He touched 99 or 100 miles an hour the other day against Schwarber. So doing all sorts of crazy things that 19-year-olds should not be doing. But there's definitely a lot of optimism and hype about him here.
Alex, we had a call early in the show asking about Bryce Harper, and there's a term that's being used with Harper in his rehab that I had never heard before, which is dry swinging, which is, as Glenn pointed out, sounds vaguely naughty. But where are things with Harper, and I guess what's the team's kind of attitude about the fact that he probably won't be back until the All-Star break? Do they look at this as, hey, we're this good and we're going to get our number one guy back midway through the season? Are they saying, hey, we got to hold the fort? Kind of just the vibe about Harper and where things stand with him.
Yeah. Well, just to clear the air on that one, dry swing, I actually didn't know what it meant either. So I asked Thompson a couple months ago last season, and he said that not making contact with the baseball. So what it sounds like, you know, just taking swings. Like not off a tee or anything like that. But right now, you know, they don't want to put a timeline on him because he tends, based off of like previous injuries, he tends to be a pretty quick healer. Him taking dry swings right now means that he's actually a little bit ahead of schedule and where he's supposed to be in his rehab. So there's definitely optimism about that. But as far as like when he might come back, there isn't like a concrete date or a concrete, even like time frame, I would say right now. It seems like All-Star break might be a more conservative estimate, but we'll have to see how it plays out. They don't seem like terribly, you know, they don't seem terribly concerned about how they're going to cobble together offense in his absence. Obviously he's a big part of this offense, but they also have a track record of making it work without, like, they know how to do this. They've done this before, and that's what they keep reiterating. So,
well, they won all those games last year when he wasn't there. It's certainly not the preferred strategy, but it did work. So while he is out, who, if we have Castellanos and Schwarber in left and right field, which, by the way, Brandon Marsh, going to have to be great in center field.
He's going to have to be on his
cover
course,
a lot of ground. Are they looking at Hall for DH against righties? Who against lefties? How do you see it playing out for now?
They've said that they're going to rotate through that spot. And that means, you know, rotating through the outfield spots. Like sometimes Castellanos might hit there, or Schwarber, or Hoskins. Maybe you move Boehm from third to first so Hoskins can DH. I think Hall is in the mix too, but some of that is contingent on his defensive versatility and also if he evens out his right-left splits, because right now they're pretty uneven. So he's been working on that. He's actually been taking reps in the outfield with Coach Paco Figueroa, which some fans are surprised to hear about given his build. But he's been hustling out there trying to learn some stuff. So there are a couple of options, but there's not going to be like one set DH. Basically, they're going to rotate through a couple of guys.
Alex, I know there's been discussion, and it's likely that they're going to use a 6-man rotation this year. How great a concern, if at all, is the idea of making sure that Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler are rested and are recovered from a very long season last season and able to go as deep and far as this team is going to need them to go?
Yeah, it's definitely something that they're paying attention to and giving thought to, but I wouldn't say it's much of a concern right now, just based off of how Wheeler and Nola have both looked early in their live bullpens. Thompson has gone out of his way a few times to just highlight how strong they look at this point in the season compared to previous seasons. So I wouldn't say that there's concern right now, but obviously, you know, they pitched deeper into last year like further than they have before. So it's definitely in the back of everyone's mind.
Alex Coffey is our guest, and I appreciate Alex because at least when it comes to music, Alex is a good old soul. Alex, the fact that I tweeted something about Warren Zevon a couple months ago and you chimed in, you don't know. My respect for you, and I had a lot of respect for you, it's like doubled. Like how in the world do you know Warren Zevon, by the way?
I feel like he's every musician's favorite musician, you know, like
yes,
that I like to listen to from like the 70s, like Jackson Brown. And I'm a big Bruce fan, too. Like
there we go. Now you're talking.
My admiration for you continues to grow.
Alex's nickname in on the Phillies beat, by the way, is Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner.
There you go. So we're talking about spring training stories. And one of the other ones this year is... It is the final year of the six-year, $24 million Scott Kingery fiasco, and maybe, just maybe, there's a reclamation project there. What have you seen? What's the storyline with that?
Yeah, so I'm going to preface this by saying take it all with a grain of salt.
Because,
You know, there have definitely been spring trainings in the past where stuff has been written about Scott Kingery that does not play out the way
five in a row.
I'm not making any promises here, but he has hit two home runs in spring training so far, including one off of Aaron Nola the other day that went all the way to Frenchie's, like the tiki bar in left field. And I talked to him and Kevin Long about some adjustments that they worked on during the offseason, and basically what Kingery told me was that this past offseason was the first full healthy offseason that he's had in years. And that he felt like he really had time to do the work that he wanted to do. And they ended up working on his stance and having him get a little bit more in his legs, almost like he's crouching down to field a ground ball. So Long is calling it a completely different swing, and he thinks that that's going to be a game changer for him. So obviously we'll see, wait and see. But they're both very optimistic, and they think that those two home runs are – a product of the work that they've been doing for weeks over the course of the offseason. So we'll see.
I just want to say one thing before you say that's a guy who years ago had this great spring, and I feel like they felt the need. I almost felt they rushed him up for the fans, for the PR of it, and it never worked out.
Yeah, but there was nobody in that organization at that time
who
didn't think that he was going to be a terrific player. I remember talking to Larry Boa about him. And Boa just raved about the player he thought Kingery was then and would be, and it hasn't worked out. For his sake, I hope Alex's cautious optimism there turns out to be true. Listen, Alex, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
I got one question before
Glenn's
we go.
Got one more.
So
sorry.
Today is kind of the you're going to watch the game in Clearwater. Is that what you're going to do today?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm Clearwater.
So it's going to be the first time you're going to get to see what's happening with the new rules. I know they've played a couple of games so far, and it's like the pitch clock and so on. Just kind of your take on what you anticipate in spring training and moving forward with all the new rules. Chaos?
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting aspect is how the pitch clock will impact the hitters. Thompson was talking yesterday about how he's been hearing how hitters might be impacted by it more than pitchers. And, you know, Harper is one of those guys that takes time. He has a routine in the box, so he's going to have to adjust when he comes back to these new regulations. And it's going to be something that they're going to have to adjust. They're going to have to figure out is like how to get him used to these new rules so that when he does return to the big leagues, it's not, you know, he doesn't have this grace period of spring training where he can be in the box and get used to it and develop a new routine. He's just one example, but it is interesting to think about it on the flip side and how the hitters might be impacted by it.
If Bryce Harper doesn't hit because he can't get into his routine, I wonder how quickly Major League Baseball will change the rules back.
Good point.
You could take 10 minutes between pitches as long as you hit a home run at the end of the at-bat. Alex, thank you so much for taking the time. We are very appreciative, very grateful, and very glad that you stayed unscathed throughout this interview. Please go put on protective gear and get out of the way of the foul balls and keep delivering us some terrific Phillies coverage. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. Thanks,
guys. Alex.
All right.
Good stuff. She's very good.
She is, and I hope she's safe because I don't want to see her get brained by a foul ball.
No, she does a very nice job on the beat. And, again, follow her on Twitter at Alex Coffee.
Let's get one call in before the break. Let's go to Jonathan, who is in Glenn's favorite city, Dallas, and he wants to talk about baseball and the younger generation. He's got a really good one-day wonder. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Happy weekend to you.
Thank you.
So a couple things happened. The Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas fight, that's an awesome one-day thing, but hardly anybody saw it.
By the way, just let me say this. More people saw it than you think because, and I want to thank my accountant, who texted during the break.
Nice segue.
Who, by the way, yeah, Rob, I'll begin my taxes soon, I promise. I'll get the stuff to you soon. Haven't started. You started?
Oh, yeah. My wife is on that.
Yeah, I got to get on it. Anyway.
She's so sharp.
He texted me during the break that, in fact, that was on HBO. Mm-hmm. That wasn't pay-per-view. So I think more people saw it than you think. But go ahead, Jonathan. Your point is taken.
Back then, a lot of people didn't have HBO. I know I heard about it the next day. I said, he lost the who?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Tyson was just going through guys at that time. And he was having this fight over in Japan, blah, blah, blah. But McClung had a great moment in front of the world.
Yes.
Everybody was watching the All-Star game. And here's another guy that did. Timmy Smith of the Washington Redskins ran for 204 yards in the Super Bowl against the Broncos. He absolutely destroyed them, won Super Bowl MVP.
Mm-hmm.
He never did anything after that.
You're right. Jonathan, thank you so much for the call. That's a great one. He did not win Super Bowl MVP, though, because that Super Bowl was the one that Doug Williams threw five touchdown passes.
And let me just say, if you're going to call with something, we're looking for the best one-day wonder, make your sports point first.
Yes, please.
We don't just want people calling up to win the contest. As good as a $25 gift card Konchak and Brewing Company is, and trust me, it is, make your sports point first. That's more important to me.
The best Pilsner I've ever had, Glenn. I think I've told you that.
I ring the bell, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, coming up, in the next segment, we're going to be doing what we're watching. Glenn and I have finally found a show that we have both seen.
Yes.
Usually we end up talking about different things on this segment, but we finally seen the same show and can compare notes, and I think our opinions are going to differ a bit. And of course, we'll get in later to more Eagles stuff, more Sixers stuff. I have a rant coming on the Flyers.
Can't wait.
Glenn has a rant about me being ageist. All kinds of good stuff. 215-592-9494. He's Glenn Mack now. I'm Mike Sielski, 94 WIP.
All right. What we're watching is sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Take advantage of Guided Door and Window's big winter sale through February. Receive 40% off all windows and doors. Call 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com.
So, finally, I broke down and subscribe to Hulu, as you've been telling me to do for months now. Get the free subscription for a couple of months.
Yep.
And I also broke down and started watching a show that you had mentioned you had seen a couple of months ago, and then I'm finally getting around to. It's been out for about 6 months. And it's called Fleischman is in Trouble. And it's based on a best-selling novel by a writer named Taffy Brodesser-Ackner. And she's a magazine writer, and she had this foray into writing novels, and the novel's become a blockbuster. And the show, she's in charge of the entire show. And it is about a guy who's in his early 40s named Toby Fleischman, who is recently divorced, and he's out there in the dating world, and he's dealing with dating apps and kind of trying to figure out how to live life in New York in the aftermath of a divorce. And his wife is very successful talent agent, and his kids are at an age where they can be difficult, and they're growing up, and his daughter's on the cusp of becoming 12 years old, which is a challenging time, and his younger son is 8 years old and a little offbeat and trying to figure out who he is, and he's got these friends who are trying to live their lives. And I have to be honest, Glenn, I'm not selling the show really well, as you know, because you've seen it.
Yep.
I'm five episodes in, and I love it, and I think part of it is because it's tied to my generation. All the characters are people who would be my age, who are living in New York. I lived in New York from a certain socioeconomic background, and they're kind of whiny, but I kind of understand why they're whiny and all of that. So, as I said, I'm only five episodes in, but I'm really liking it from what I have heard. And I think you mentioned this to me. There's a big twist coming.
Oh, yeah.
That I haven't seen yet. I've got three more episodes to go. It's one season, eight episodes, as I said, based entirely on this novel. I turn the floor over to you to tell me why I should not like the show as much as
well,
I like it.
Well, your wife read the novel, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So she kind of knows what's coming. I assume she hasn't told you.
She has not.
Okay. So it is, first of all, the acting in the show is terrific.
It is.
The cast of the show, which is Jesse Eisenberg, who people know originally from Social Network,
yes,
and he's done other things. Claire Danes, who is a very accomplished, terrific mm-hmm. actress, who you don't see a whole lot in the first five, six episodes. Aha, plot twist coming.
Okay.
I'll just tell you that.
All right.
And Lizzie Kaplan, who
yes.
is also a very fine actress. So it's really got acting chops.
It does.
I'll give it that. It's set in New York. You get to see a lot of New York and the suburb, Westchester, and out there.
It makes the city look beautiful.
Makes the city look great. And so all of that is very good. It was a very weird show for me because I thought it started out as like a show about a guy who was getting divorced and then dating every single, having sex with basically every single woman in New York, which you get to see him having sex with every single woman
I should
in
have
New
mentioned
York.
That at the top. It's a pretty raunchy show.
There's
at times.
A lot of nudity in that show. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's all fine and well. That's great. I like the show, so I'm going to bottom line give it a B, a mm-hmm. gentleman's B.
Okay.
And I will just tell you that what's coming in episodes 7 and 8, right? You've seen through 6?
I've seen through 5.
Okay, well, what's coming in episodes 7 and 8, it's like, oh, I thought it was a show about this. Actually, it changes several times. First, you think it's a show about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you think it's a show about kind of the machinations of friendships and becoming middle-aged in your 40s and living in New York and all of that kind of stuff. And then in the very last two episodes, it's like, oh, it's a show about that.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is kind of cool
mm-hmm.
because the show evolves, and I enjoyed that. My only issue with this show, so I praise the acting.
You did.
Right? I praise the production in New York and so mm-hmm. on. And I praise the way the plot arc moves. Jeez, would you just all stop whining for a second? My issue with the show is it's a lot of very, very wealthy 40-year-olds whining for an hour a time on my TV.
Mm-hmm.
And like, life ain't that bad. This is what I hated about Rent. Everybody loved to play Rent.
Yes.
To me, it's like, just shut up, stop whining, go get a job. It was not a popular opinion when I screamed that out in the audience of a theater, okay? The general consensus around me disagreed.
I'm stunned.
So I had kind of that feeling on this of like, life's not that bad, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a $300,000 job and you're carping about making ends meet. For most people watching the show, you've got pretty good lives.
Yeah, and I get that. Part of it, I think the fact that I'm in the sweet spot demographic.
Yeah, you're of that age.
Of that age.
And you're a whiner. So,
well, that
you know.
Too. You know, stop talking over me, Glenn.
Yeah.
I give it 3 stars out of 4 with the possibility to either add a half a star or a star as I watch the final 3 episodes or, you know, drop one off if I think the plot twist that you've built me up for now turns out to be empty and ridiculous. And
it's not empty and ridiculous. It's actually kind of interesting.
Okay.
So I give it, I mean, I usually go letter grades. I mm-hmm. give it a B, but I wouldn't disagree with 3 stars out of 4 saying that it could be 4 if they did a few things better. But
yeah.
There you go. By the way, if you're getting Hulu,
mm-hmm.
while you're getting Hulu, you know, you may not keep it long.
Right.
The 3 shows to absolutely watch on Hulu, because, you know, people say to me, like, I can't subscribe to all these
yes.
things that you do, and including my wife, who says, why are we subscribing to 8 streaming services? I pay the bills.
Right.
Do you know what we're paying? She's right. But
Glenn,
while you're getting it.
Glenn, don't whine. Don't be whining.
Well, no, I'm not. While you're getting it, make sure that you watch The Bear.
Okay.
Only Murders in the Building. Actually, 4. Reservation Dogs and What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
Which are 4 excellent series, and you watch all those, and it's like, hey, Hulu, nice to have known you.
The Bear is one that I've wanted to see.
Tremendous.
I've heard nothing but great
things
about
it. One of my favorite shows of last year.
And Only Murders in the Building has Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Yes,
correct?
Love it.
So I'm in. I'm
you
in
know
for
I
those
got tickets to see them play, come to Philadelphia next October.
Great.
I bought them in December for my wife's birthday this year, but we're going next October. I felt like I would be the first to buy them, and there's multiple performances. I'm sitting in the Kimmel Center behind a post.
Oh, no.
That's the best I could get.
Well, all right, so I'll one-up you there. Last Sunday, my family, and by my family I mean my wife, my 2 sons, my sister, her husband, their 2 kids, and my mother and father, went to the Broadhurst Theater on Broadway and saw A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond
music.
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah, and it was terrific. It really was. And it was interesting because we saw a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday, and I think my wife and I, my sister and her husband, and the four kids between us were the 8 youngest people in the theater.
Yeah, well, Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
But liked it?
Loved it.
Yeah,
yeah.
There you
even my kids loved it.
People who go to theater tend to be older because theater's damned expensive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this was something the entire family had been kind of saving up for a while. Anyway, enough about Neil Diamond. Let's get a couple of calls here. Rory wants to talk about the Sixers. Rory, what do you got?
I was at the game the other night. How are you, fellas?
Good.
I was at the Memphis game, and it was a lot of fun when they pulled it out in the fourth quarter. The Sixers have put a good, entertaining product on the court for 5 years now. And I think they can steal a title in like a one-off deal. If Boston gets knocked out, maybe Milwaukee has an injury, they can make it to the finals and maybe make a noise. But this is not a dynasty, you know, at all. They are built for the right now.
No, I think you're 100% right about that, Rory. I mean, the way the contracts are set up, the way patience, as much hope as there is about the Sixers, the fact that, you know, their fans do feel like, hey, but we've been waiting for this team to deliver for a while, and patience is probably short, particularly with Doc Rivers. I know it is with my partner here when it comes to Doc.
Yeah.
I think you're right. This isn't, you know, don't bank on any kind of extended run here. This is, they better do it now or else changes are coming. You have a really good one-day wonder. Rory, hit us with it.
Okay, this goes back. This is too early for you, Mike, but Glenn might remember it. February 77, the Flyers had a forward named Al Hill. First game in the NHL, 2 goals, 3 assists. And hardly did anything after that.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he made the season. That might not be as good as Buster Douglas.
It's
but
pretty
I thought
good,
I had
though.
Him
right away. It's old school, and it's pretty good.
It's old school. It's pretty good. And not only have I heard of Al Hill, Glenn, and you can verify this, I have his Wikipedia page up here. He was the first guy I thought of when you suggested that we do a one-day
how
wonder.
How did you know Al Hill?
I know all
you
and I see all.
What year were you born?
1975.
Okay.
And he did that in 1977.
So your dad has you in front of the TV going, well, this kid's going to go to the Hall of Fame, young Mike. Watch this.
When you cover a team in Philadelphia, you have to know the history. You just have
to. True that.
You know, Mark in Cherry Hill wants to weigh in on Joel Embiid, and he's also got a pretty good one-day wonder. Go ahead, Mark. What about Joel?
Well, I think Joel Embiid is vastly underappreciated in this city. I mean, I realize they haven't won a championship, but people forget that he played last year with a fractured face. And, you know, I blame James Harden more than anybody else because he came up short. I don't know if it was because of his hamstring or whatever, but Joel Embiid is a treasure. And I just think that we need to appreciate this guy.
This is an interesting, you raise an interesting point. Is Joel Embiid underappreciated, or some would say Joel Embiid is overappreciated because he's never done anything in the playoffs? I think he's correctly appreciated.
Yeah, I think people have his career and his ability and his track record kind of in the right perspective for the most part. Is he great? Yeah. Is there more he probably needs to do? Yeah.
Mark, I would say one of these years, and hopefully it's 2023, he's got to have that great playoff run, right?
Oh, I agree. But I think the thing that bothers me is, like, for example, you have one commentator on your station, a woman's his name.
Yeah, but
constantly.
But I know who you're talking about. But listen, everybody's got their own opinion. You're talking about the vast majority of the fans, right? Do you think the basketball fans, and I'll put in the writers, the broadcasters overall, as a group, do you think they underappreciate Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I think, I'll tell you something else. People try to read minds. Like, Landon was saying he was sulking because he didn't get the MVP. I didn't see that. I saw him trying to bust his behind to get wins. And I think, I just think he's not appreciated. And I do think he should have been the MVP last year. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Mark. Who's your one-day wonder?
Leon Spinks.
That's a pretty good one.
Pretty good one.
I saw that fight when I was hungover in the Air Force facing him watching Mississippi, and I cried after that fight.
Yeah.
Well, that's a story for another day, Mark. Thanks for the call.
As you know, when I've said I worked in Detroit before I worked here, and Leon Spinks was from Detroit, and or at least ended up in Detroit. And no, he is from Detroit. And there was, I had to do a story soon before I came here. Like, he just, he was down and out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He did not, he didn't keep the money. He didn't know how to do it. He had domestic issues. He was a really sweet guy. He was a very nice guy, but he was not built for fame.
Right.
Joe, so I'm going to bottom line give it a B, a gentleman's B.
Okay.
And I will just tell you that what's coming in episodes 7 and 8, right? You've seen through 6?
I've seen through 5.
Okay. Well, what's coming in episodes 7 and 8, it's like, oh, I thought it was a show about this. Actually, it changes several times. First, you think it's a show about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you think it's a show about kind of the machinations of friendships and becoming middle-aged in your 40s and living in New York and all of that kind of stuff. And then in the very last two episodes, it's like, oh, it's a show about that.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is kind of cool because the show evolves, and I enjoyed that. My only issue with this is I praise the acting.
You did.
Right? I praise the production in New York and so on. And I praise the way the plot arc moves. Jeez, would you just all stop whining for a second? My issue with the show is it's a lot of very, very wealthy 40-year-olds whining for an hour a time on my TV. And like, life ain't that bad. This is what I hated about Rent. Everybody loved the play Rent.
Yes.
To me, it's like, just shut up, stop whining, go get a job. It was not a popular opinion when I screamed that out in the audience of a theater, okay? The general consensus around me disagreed.
I'm stunned.
So I had kind of that feeling on this of like, life's not that bad, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a $300,000 job and you're carping about making ends meet. For most people watching the show, you've got pretty good lives.
Yeah, and I get that. Part of it, I think the fact that I'm in the sweet spot demographic.
Yeah, you're of that age.
Of that age.
And you're a whiner. So,
well, that
you know.
Too. You know, stop talking over me, Glenn.
Yeah.
I give it 3 stars out of 4 with the possibility to either add a half a star or a star as I watch the final 3 episodes or, you know, drop one off if I think the plot twist that you've built me up for now turns out to be empty and ridiculous. And
it's not empty and ridiculous. It's actually kind of interesting.
Okay.
So I give it, I mean, I usually go letter grades. I give it a B, but I wouldn't disagree with 3 stars out of 4 saying that it could be 4 if they did a few things better. But
yeah.
There you go. By the way, if you're getting Hulu. While you're getting Hulu, you know, you may not keep it long.
Right.
The 3 shows to absolutely watch on Hulu, because, you know, people say to me, like, I can't subscribe to all these things that you do, and including my wife, who says, why are we subscribing to 8 streaming services? I pay the bills.
Right.
Do you know what we're paying? She's right. But while you're getting it.
Glenn, don't whine. Don't be whining.
No, I'm not. While you're getting it, make sure that you watch The Bear.
Okay.
Only Murders in the Building. Actually, 4. Reservation Dogs and What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
Which are 4 excellent series, and you watch all those, and it's like, hey, Hulu, nice to have known you.
The Bear is one that I've wanted to see.
Tremendous.
I've heard nothing but great
things
about it.
One of my favorite shows of last year.
And Only Murders in the Building has Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Yes,
correct?
Love it.
So I'm in. I'm
you
in
know
for
I got
two
tickets to see them play, come to Philadelphia next October.
Great.
I bought them in December for my wife's birthday this year, but we're going next October. I thought like I would be the first to buy them, and there's multiple performances. I'm sitting in the Kimmel Center behind a post.
Oh no!
That's the best I could get.
Well, all right. So I'll one up you there. Last Sunday, my family, and by my family I mean my wife, my 2 sons, my sister, her husband, their 2 kids, and my mother and father, went to the Broadhurst Theater on Broadway and saw A Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond music.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, and it was terrific. It really was. And it was interesting because we saw a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday, and I think my wife and I, my sister and her husband, and the 4 kids between us were the 8 youngest people in the theater.
Yeah, well, Neil Diamond.
Yeah. But
liked it?
Loved it.
Yeah,
yeah.
There you
even my kids loved it.
People
so.
Who go to theater tend to be older because theater's damned expensive.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this was something the entire family had been kind of saving up for a while. Anyway, enough about Neil Diamond. Let's get a couple of calls here. Rory wants to talk about the Sixers. Rory, what do you got?
I was at the game the other night. How are you, fellas?
Good.
I was at the Memphis game, and it was a lot of fun when they pulled it out in the fourth quarter. The Sixers have put a good, entertaining product on the court for 5 years now. And I think they can steal a title in like a one-off deal. If Boston gets knocked out, maybe Milwaukee has an injury, they can make it to the finals and maybe make a noise. But this is not a dynasty, you know, at all. They are built for the right now.
No, I think you're 100% right about that, Rory. I mean, the way the contracts are set up, the way patience, as much hope as there is about the Sixers, the fact that, you know, their fans do feel like, hey, but we've been waiting for this team to deliver for a while, and patience is probably short, particularly with Doc Rivers. I know it is with my partner here when it comes to Doc.
Yeah.
I think you're right. This isn't, you know, don't bank on any kind of extended run here. This is, they better do it now or else changes are coming. You have a really good one-day wonder. Rory, hit us with it.
Okay, this goes back. This is too early for you, Mike, but Glenn might remember it. February 77, the Flyers had a forward named Al Hill. First game in the NHL, 2 goals, 3 assists. Hardly did anything after that.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he made the season.
That might
not be as good as Buster Douglas.
It's
but
pretty
I
good, though.
It's
old school, and it's pretty good.
It's old school. It's pretty good. And not only have I heard of Al Hill, Glenn, and you can verify this, I have his Wikipedia page up here. He was the first guy I thought of when you suggested that we do a one-day wonder.
How did you know Al Hill?
I know all
you
and I see all.
What year were you born?
1975.
Okay.
And he did that in 1977.
So your dad has you in front of the TV going, well, this kid's going to go in the Hall of Fame, young Mike. Watch this.
When you cover a team in Philadelphia, you have to know the history. You just have
to. True that.
You know. Mark in Cherry Hill wants to weigh in on Joel Embiid, and he's also got a pretty good one-day wonder. Go ahead, Mark. What about Joel?
Well, I think Joel Embiid is vastly underappreciated in this city. I mean, I realize they haven't won a championship, but people forget that he played last year with a fractured face. And, you know, I blame James Harden more than anybody else because he came up short. I don't know if it was because of his hamstring or whatever, but Joel Embiid is a treasure. And I just think that we need to appreciate this guy.
You raise an interesting point. Is Joel Embiid underappreciated, or some would say Joel Embiid is overappreciated because he's never done anything in the playoffs? I think he's correctly appreciated.
Yeah, I think people have his career and his ability and his track record kind of in the right perspective for the most part. Is he great? Yeah. Is there more he probably needs to do? Yeah.
Mark, I would say one of these years, and hopefully it's 2023, he's got to have that great playoff run, right?
Oh, I agree. But I think the thing that bothers me is, like, for example, you have one commentator on your station, a woman's his name.
Yeah,
but
I know who you're talking about. But listen, everybody's got their own opinion. You're talking about the vast majority of fans, right? Do you think the basketball fans, and I'll put in the writers, the broadcasters overall, as a group, do you think they underappreciate Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I think, I'll tell you something else. People try to read minds. Like, Landon was saying he was sulking because he didn't get the MVP. I didn't see that. I saw him trying to bust his behind to get wins. And I think, I just think he's not appreciated. And I do think he should have been the MVP last year. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Mark. Who's your one-day wonder?
Leon Spinks.
That's a pretty good one.
Pretty good one.
I saw that fight when I was hungover in the Air Force facing him watching Mississippi, and I cried after that fight.
That's a story for another day, Mark. Thanks for the call.
As you know, and I've said, I worked in Detroit before I worked here, and Leon Spinks was from Detroit, or at least ended up in Detroit. He is from Detroit. And I had to do a story soon before I came here. Like, he was down and out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He didn't keep the money. He didn't know how to do it. He had domestic issues. He was a really sweet guy. He was a very nice guy, but he was not built for fame.
Right.
It was a sad story.
You see that a lot in boxing. I think it's part of the reason that the sport has kind of been in decline and has declined, you know, since the days of Ali and Frazier and all of that. So anyway, coming up later in the show, we're going to dive more into the Sixers, dive more into the Flyers and the Phillies, all kinds of stuff. Glenn, I think you have some information for our fans here.
I do. If this cold winter we've endured hasn't been cold, but it is still winter, and it may still be here. But if you're thinking about replacing your drafty, inefficient windows and doors. The great people at Guided Door and Window, they can help. They'll give you one more month to do so at their best prices of the year. Now, maybe you haven't taken advantage of Guided's big winter sale. This is your last chance to do so. You receive 40% off every window and door. That's right, 40% off each expertly installed, energy-efficient replacement window, which also includes free, high-performance, low-E glass. And you get 40% off any high-quality door, including insulated entry doors, sliding patio doors, garage doors, and storm doors. And you can buy now and pay later with Guided's interest-free financing or low monthly payment plans. Offer is going to expire at the end of February. Don't let this final chance for big savings pass you by. If your home needs new windows or doors, call the experts at Guided today. Schedule a free in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GUIDED or visit them at goguided.com. That's go, G-U-I-D-A.com.
Mike Sielski, Glenn Macnow, 94 WIP. Let's get Steve from Norristown up here. Wants to talk about the Phillies and also has a good one-day wonder here. Go ahead, Steve. What's your thoughts on the Phils?
Hey, guys. Honestly, I see this report where they're talking like Vegas is talking like 87 wins with the Phillies and saying that, like, you know, they're not even like a top 10 team to compete for the World Series. And it's just questionable to me because of the fact that, honestly, I think this team is better now than it was last year. And I understand that Harper's going to be out for the first half of the season. I get that. But, you know, Trey Turner's pretty good the last time I looked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you wouldn't think that Nick Castellanos, you know, in a perfect world, would have a repeat of the season he had last year.
So this is really odd, Steve. And I saw a I think the number's gone up to whatever, 88.5, 89.5, but still not up a lot. Jason Stark of The Athletic did a survey of major league executives, and they named the Phillies the most improved team in the National League. So it doesn't all fit.
Yeah, I just I'm excited about T'Juan Walker, mm-hmm. And honestly, Glenn, I kind of agree with you with Painter, and I know it's not a popular opinion, but just because how his arm isn't stretched out, what I was thinking and what I really wanted is with – we saw in the World Series how Wheeler and Nola were starting to break down. If you were to be able to have, like, Bailey Falter as your five, mm-hmm. and maybe Painter as a six, have like a six-man rotation.
Your
arms will make it a little bit longer. And I mean, I'm really excited about the bullpen piece.
Yeah, they've made a lot of moves.
Yeah,
I'm upbeat like you are. I'm sorry, Mike.
No, I was just going to say they're going to go with a six-man rotation either for part of or all of the season. And you know, Steve, thanks very much for the call. Actually, before I let you go, Steve, who's your one-day wonder?
So my one-day wonder was, this happened 3 years ago. Most people don't know his name, but the guy's name is Dave Ayers. He was the 42-year-old Zamboni driver that came and played goaltender.
That's right.
for the Carolina Hurricanes.
That's a great one.
And he ended up playing like more than half the game, and they won that game. That was when both goaltenders got hurt. It was in Toronto. The guy lives in Toronto. He drives a Zamboni, and he came in. And he was able to be, and he got the W.
That's
so
right.
It was legitimately a one-day wonder because the guy never played.
That's a great one. Steve, thank you for the call.
I like that one.
Yeah, I like that one too. Will it top Buster Douglas? We're going to have to decide that by the end of the show. It is time now to check in with our friends, the Cooper Doc. Dr. Mark Pollard is here with us. Dr. Pollard, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Hope you guys are doing well.
We're doing fine. So we had a couple of quick questions about Eagles players who have gone under the knife, as it were, in the last week or two. The first is Lane Johnson, who famously, you know, played through this torn groin in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. He had surgery last week. Just as a general matter, kind of what's the timeline on a surgery of this nature? You know, will he be ready for training camp? Will he be ready even sooner than that? Once he's back, kind of what kind of shape will he be in? Just the idea of Lane going through this groin surgery.
Well, it's fairly variable, you know, with these kind of so-called core muscle injuries and the recovery from the surgery. you know, kind of depending on how severe it is. You know, certainly we've had examples of guys that have gotten back, you know, 6 weeks or something like that. And other times, you know, it takes multiple months. So, you know, difficult to prognosticate. But, you know, if you were to really press me for it, I'd say probably, you know, 6 to 8 weeks would probably not be unreasonable.
So he's got loads of time to recover. Is it an injury that once you sustain it, you're susceptible to getting it again? Or is it just kind of more of a freakish one-time problem?
Again, there's multiple areas in with these core muscles that can get hurt. And so, you know, the hope is that, you know, with this specific area that got hurt, you do the surgery and, you know, the healing takes place. And, you know, oftentimes with things like this, the healed tissue may actually be more stout than the natural tissue was. And so you'd theoretically be less likely to injure that area, but it would still be possible to injure another area.
Gotcha. And the other player who was important to the Eagles all season came back and ended up playing through an injury similarly to the way that Lane did was Avante Maddox, the cornerback. And of course, no event in anyone's life can take place without it being posted on social media. And Avante posted the other day that he had had surgery on his left foot. He had had turf toe. What's the timeline like with this? What kind of recovery is ahead for Avante? Again, is this something that's going to linger, or is it, you know, after a certain period of time, he's back to normal?
Yeah, it takes a little bit longer, I think, for the turf toe recovery than, say, the core injury. With the core muscle injury, you're, you know, essentially just waiting for the muscle to heal back the bone, as opposed to the turf toe, which essentially is caused by hyperextending or having your big toe brought up too far and injuring the ligaments on the bottom. So it's more of like a ligament kind of stabilization surgery, and those do take a bit longer to recover. Something like that.
Cooper Medical Center, our Cooper Doctor. Thank you so much for the insight. As always, have a good Saturday.
All right, thanks. You guys.
Thank you, Doc. Be well.
All right, Dr. Pollard there. Let's get one more call in before the break. Jeff wants to talk about the Phillies, and he has, from my childhood, an excellent one-day wonder. Jeff, what are your thoughts on the Phillies first?
Mike and Glenn, how are you guys doing?
All right.
Doing great.
Okay, so I'm really excited for this Philly season. I think they've pretty much added everywhere they needed to based on what they were needing last year. Here's my question. I just thought of this recently. What do you think is going to have a bigger impact, the addition of Trey Turner or the combination of getting Walker and then having Painter come up in a six-man rotation over the course of the season? Because the pitching really was not deep last year at all.
Yeah, you know, I think Turner will have a greater impact only because he's going to be there every single day, number one.
Okay.
And number two.
That's why I combined the other two.
Yeah. And number two, he's really good.
Yeah. You added one of the 15 best players in baseball.
Yeah.
I think they just did the MLB Network countdown, and that's anybody. I think he was number 11.
Yep.
You added a guy who can play defense, who is one of the fastest runners in baseball, who can hit for average, who can hit for power, who takes a walk, who's a good guy in the clubhouse. I mean, it's not quite the impact of the Harper signing a few years ago, but boy, it's up there. I think they're deeper in pitching. I've seen people think Taijuan Walker will not succeed here. I'm not sure why they think that, but yeah, I'll take as Mike said, an everyday player who's a terrific player at shortstop.
I just hate the bullpen game, and I hate it especially when we were in a playoff run. That drove me nuts to have bullpen games.
They're going
to
do it again.
Yeah. Enough starters.
Yeah.
I know.
It's the way of the world now. So, all right, Jeff, you're speaking to my heart here with your one-day wonder. Hit me with it.
Okay, this was a guy who hit 40% of his career home runs in one day and one from each side of the plate. How about that, Steve Jelt?
That is a great one. And Jeff, thank you so much for the call. Glenn, I remember watching Phillies games as a kid, 13, 14-year-old kid on Prism, and I remember watching that game, the game where the Pittsburgh Pirates took a 10-0 lead early on. Jim Rooker, their play-by-play guy, said, if we lose this game, I'll walk back to Pittsburgh. And the reason the Phillies ended up coming back and winning that game was because Steve Jeltz hit two home runs, one from each side of the plate. And Steve Jeltz was not Trey Turner. Let's put it that way.
But it was before you were with. We had Steve Jeltz on the anniversary of that game when we were doing This Day in Philadelphia
really?
Sports History.
Because
it was one of the most amazing games, as you say, for all of those things. And Jim Rooker did end up, not that day, but he ended up doing a charity thing where he walked from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh, raised a lot of money. And we had Steve Jeltz on to talk about it. And he was great. He was a really fun interview, and he kind of got himself. Mm-hmm. You know, he realized he was Steve Jeltz. And just as a footnote, along with the great Tyler Kepner, who you know, I am a lifetime member of the Steve Jeltz fan club, original, going back to 1990.
Why?
Because it seemed like a fun thing to do at the time.
You have some explaining to do for some of your decisions in the early 90s
Well,
there.
You know, they formed the Steve Jeltz fan club, and it's like, yeah, sure, I'm in. Why not? I think dues were a buck and a half.
Buck and a half. Steve Jeltz is one of those names that just torments Phillies fans of a certain generation. You know, he's not quite Von Hayes, but, you know, he's way up there in the memory banks of those of us who lived and mostly died with those teams in the late 80s and early
90s. So he hit five home. The caller said 40% of his home runs, so that would make him, I can do math, five home runs in his career.
Yeah.
Two that day, and one from the left side, one from the right side.
Correct. Correct.
It is a great.
It's amazing.
That's a pretty good one.
I can still hear.
I like the local angle.
I think Gary Maddox was the color analyst on Prism. I can still remember hearing him say, boom, when Steve Jeltz hit the second home run, which is the only time boom and Steve Jeltz have been used in the same sentence.
And am I correct that it became problematic after that because Steve Jeltz briefly thought he was a power hitter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's swinging for the fences.
Those are the Phillies of the late 1980s.
Swinging that 31-ounce bat for the fences.
Coming up after the break, Keith Pompey, my colleague with the Inquirer, is going to talk to us about the Sixers. Nick, Rob, Paul, hang in there. We will get your calls. He is Glenn Mack now. I am Mike Sielski. You can call in at 215-592-9494 into W.